I'm Lights, Camera, Jackson. This is a new episode of the LCJ Q&A podcast. Thanks to everybody out there for listening. The holiday season and award season, they collide. It happens every year. It's always very exciting. And this is a perfect one for this. Piney the Lonesome Pine. It's an Oscar-qualified animated short. And joining me right now in the LCJ Q&A are the directors, Todd Edwards and Timothy Hooton. Gentlemen, what's going on?
Hey, great to talk to you.
How are you?
Good, good. Doing really well. Thanks for being on the show. So excited to talk about this short. I'll start with you, Todd. This is a really sweet animated short for the holidays. It's appropriate and great for the whole family to kind of gather around and watch. Todd, how did this story originate?
You know, the story was brought to us by the author, Jane Beckerink, and it was a book. And basically, we got involved to bring it to the screen. In our business, there's a lot of speculation type of meetings we have, meet and greets, and so we kind of started out thinking this would just be another team coming to us with a dream that might never happen, but they pulled it together. This was last year, and basically we got involved sort of from the ground level of turning this thing into an animated special, and the goal was always to make something that was a classic tone. We weren't going for cheap laughs. It's something that, you know, maybe has the feeling of the types of holiday specials that we all grew up on, you know, the feeling of Charlie Brown or Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And so it was great that we were really on the same page with the executive producers of wanting to deliver that kind of classic tone in a world that wasn't bogged down with sort of the modern cynicism, maybe, something from a more innocent time.
Oh, I get, yeah.
Yeah, we really just made an effort to make sure that those characters had that feeling of something older, and then we had great voice talent that came in on this. Jonathan Pryce plays the grandfather, which he just brings a gravitas to it that is like undeniable, and he is actually from the Welsh area that where the story takes place. And then we had some other great actors, Simon Pegg is the scrappy dog character. So it turned into just an awesome experience for Tim and myself and our producer, Katie. The three of us have a company called Hardy Howl Films, and it turned into a little labor of love for us.
Yeah, and that classic tone really shines through. It absolutely does, especially with the music. Timothy, talk a little bit about the music perfectly capturing the tone that you were going for.
Yeah, well, like Todd said, we're huge fans of like Rankin Bass. And so we really wanted to bring that tone or support that tone with the score. And the executive producers, they actually brought the Timothy who did the score, the other Timothy. And it was really fun to collaborate with him. Todd and I actually also included a song of ours in the show, and it was really fun to maintain with all of the breadth and depth of holiday music that there is, to select songs that are in the public domain, and then support that feeling. Like we couldn't do it all in like the jazz tones of Charlie Brown. That has become a soundtrack that we're all really and nostalgic to. That we're very familiar with, but there's a touch of that. There's a touch of Danny Elfman in it. There's a touch of John Williams. When Todd and I cut together our first the first Board-O-Matic that became the Animatic, we did a temp score and we used a lot of John Williams, which a lot of people probably don't know that John Williams was the composer for Home Alone, and which is like it's a really classic Christmas soundtrack, and so we used some from that and Elf and other things to give like the feel that we wanted, and then Timothy, the composer, he did a great job of delivering.
Absolutely. This short, Piney, it's about a little girl named Georgie and her grandfather in the Welsh town. And we'll get to that Welsh town in a second because I got a specific question for that. And Georgie becomes emotionally attached to this tree, to this Christmas tree, and she's the only one that can talk to it, and the tree talks back to her. I guess I'll ask you about the Welsh town first. I mean, Todd, did you use this town because of that weatherman who could pronounce it incredibly, and that video is all over YouTube?
We watched a lot of YouTube. there are lots of tutorials. I knew from the beginning, it's like, okay, this sounds like gibberish. You know, when we saw the first draft of the script, I thought maybe someone fell asleep and their head hit the keyboard and a bunch of letters just started spewing out. But then I found out, wait, no, this is a real town. Okay, this is interesting. And I knew right away that before this production is over, we're going to learn how to say the name of this town. Shambar, Forth, Gwingus, Go, Gareth, Wind, Drop, Off, Kanta, Silio, Go, Go, Gok, which sounds like nothing, but it's actually, I could say it twice in a row, Shambar, Forth, Gwingus, Go, Gareth, Wind, Drop, Off, Kanta, Silio, Go, Go, Gok. And and you can roll the tape back, and I said the same thing twice. I didn't make it up.
Amazing.
So that was fun, and, you know, we had our actors from Europe, it's like they grew up kind of knowing this. It's like something kids learn on the playground. And like Simon Pegg just like rattled it off to us. And of course, Jonathan Pryce grew up in that area. So I don't know. It's kind of fun. It's like a little secret. Once you learn about this town, it's like, yeah, it's real. It's like it was a town in, it was in the 1800s, where I think as a publicity stunt, they sort of purposefully said, okay, we're going to name this town the longest name in Europe, so that's what we become known for, because everybody has to be known for something.
So, Timothy, tell me about, I guess, deciding on who gets to experience what, as far as who gets to communicate with who. We have Jaxter the dog, who halfway through all of a sudden can speak, and it's Simon Pegg's voice, and he communicates with Piney. Tell me about building all of that and seeing who sees what and who hears what.
Yeah, so in part of our process, because Todd and I are, we're a writing and directing team, and so the first thing that we do is we have to look at the script and see how we can transition it from that document to a tight story within the confines of a TV special length. So there was a lot that we needed to edit out of the story. There are elements that we added, I don't know. We also have a additional story materials credit on this project because there were significant things that we needed to adjust. And so part of that was creating some consistent rules. And in the original story, and I think this is maybe consistent with Jane's book, there's no distinction. Like anyone can talk to the tree. It's kind of no holds barred. And we wanted to put it in those like classic Toy Story rules where it kind of narrows the scope of who can communicate and to make it feel a little bit more magical. And so that was a fun thing to hone in on how those rules should play. And one of the places in the special where where I think this really stands out is when the bus driver pulls up and not to give away any spoilers here, but there's a moment when both Piney and Jaxter are out on their adventure trying to get back to Georgie, and bus driver Besma pulls up and is seeing what she's seeing. Is she's seeing a tree and a puppy dog that's out lost in the snow, waiting at a bus stop. And so we're seeing both sides of the conversation, and we tried to make it clear by being consistent with the camera angles we chose for different moments so that it's clear, like, okay, this is her POV. She's right. Just seeing a tree without eyes and a barking dog. So when we shift the POV to a wide, like, almost like a God's eye, big boom shot, or from their perspective, that's when we're seeing them talk.
Yeah, no, I'm really glad that you went by those rules. It really works, and I love the shot where the bus and the car separate. There is a lot of power in that shot.
And It's a heartbreak. We've watched it many times with kids. Todd and I both have kids. We watched it with our kids, and And that's just the worst part for them to see that moment. In
yeah, they're always like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Going separate ways and not aware.
Right. So close.
You get emotionally invested in this. You really do. We're with the directors of Piney, The Lonesome Pine, Todd Edwards and Timothy Hooton. Todd, while I got you, I got to ask you about Hoodwinked, because 14 years ago, this was the first movie I ever reviewed. I started my career with Hoodwinked. I guess I got to ask, how much fun was it making that movie, first of all, because it is so iconic in the animation world with Twitchy and all the different characters.
Oh, thanks for saying. I mean, I think when we started that project, we didn't know what it would become. I mean, we certainly had a lot of hopes for it. And it just was born out of an independent spirit. We kind of just didn't know that we couldn't do it. We had a little bit of experience in the animation field, and it was just kind of like a little bit like the Wild West, but bringing our live action sensibilities, where we really focused on the script and mm-hmm. trying to get that to sort of a locked place. And then, the story reel was a very quick pace that is a little bit not normal, I think, for what a feature film normally would do in animation. I don't know. You might normally spend, 12 months on your reel. We spent like 3 months on it.
Wow.
So in some ways, the limits sort of propelled us forward. And I think once we had it in that animatic form, it started to feel like, okay, we might really have something on our hands here. Because we can show this to a bunch of kids, and they're already into it, and we haven't even started animation yet.
Mm. No,
so and then the talent we got involved, like Patrick Warburton was on early on, and that was like, he was Kronk from Emperor's New Groove.
Sure.
And so once we got Patrick, we were like, we're making a movie, folks, And so I think that's when it suddenly just started to, like, get real. But, yeah, it was a crazy Wild West sort of indie movie experience.
Wow.
Luckily had a happy ending.
Yes, it did, and a happy ending as well for the sequel, because I was following the story of what was going to happen with Hoodwinked 2. They put out the Burger King toys when the movie was supposed to come out, and then Weinstein pushed it a year, and I was so glad when Hoodwinked 2 finally came out.
I'm glad you're a fan.
Oh, I am, absolutely. Man, love it. It will always have a special place in my heart as the first film I ever reviewed, absolutely. And getting back to Piney, guys, what Hoodwinked did really well was you threw in a lot of jabs at the fairy tale world and some humor there and some clever lines. And what you guys do here as well a little bit is some holiday season jabs. I noticed a little Frosty moment. I noticed a few little things in there. Timothy, how was it incorporating those?
Yeah, we those are things.
You're actually
that
talking to the snowman.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I do the voice of the snowman at the end, and that was something that Todd and I wanted to add to the story. With that little joke that Jaxter says about what's Jaxter?
You talk too. let me guess. You talk too.
Yeah. So Piney leans in and says that, and Jaxter's like, "Are you kidding me? There's no such thing as a talking snowman." But his nose looks delicious, because Jaxter is he doesn't gnaw on bones, he gnaws on carrots, because Jaxter's owners are vegan, and so is he. And that was something that they brought to the story. But anyway, yeah, I think Todd already mentioned this, but we love the classic holiday movies. Most of them are stop motion. And that was something that we also tried to bring to this with our partners in Macedonia, V-House. We've worked on many projects with them. We love them. They're almost like family. They know what our expectations are. Even on lower budget fare like this, where we still want it to feel like great cinematography and great textures and lighting. And so they know what our standards are. And I think that we really achieved it with them.
Well, and it's a great testament too to like our partnership as directors, because sometimes we'll pitch an idea to each other. I mean, we do it constantly all day long, And so Tim pitched me this idea. Like, hey, why don't we, I don't want to spoil, but we have a big snowman surprise at the end. And it's pretty crazy. And Tim was like, no, I think we got to go for it. It's just like a little bit out there, and it'll leave people smiling as you go into the credits. And so I was like, okay, let's try it out. And so luckily our executive producers thought it was as hilarious as we did. But
there's several moments like that. Another one that we really love how it came off is there's this breaking the fourth wall that Jaxter does. One time it's just slightly, another time it's unmistakable, and we call that Jaxter's Jim from the Office look. And there were little things like that, because this story, one of the things that makes it classic is that it's very earnest. It's not really a comedy like a lot of the DreamWorks, Illumination films that families are used to seeing in more recent years. And so because of that more earnest tone, we couldn't pack it with a lot of the physical humor that we like. Like, there's not a twitchy kind of character in the story. And so we try to support that with just like little moments that almost like kids might not even notice Jaxter breaking the fourth wall, but when we've been in screenings of it, like adults really get that and appreciate it.
Mm. Yeah,
that's leaning on the beauty of the world more than maybe something like Hoodwinks, where it's like, okay, we know this isn't going to be a big yuck fest, so let's just make this a very enjoyable world to be in, where just every scene has its own little beautiful little nuggets to just take in, and it really, I think it helps make the story endearing as well.
Yeah.
Timothy Williams' score supports that. I mean, our hope is that this becomes like a new Christmas, like a favorite Christmas classic, where both the environment, so like you want to pour yourself a cup of cocoa or a cup of Christmas tea, and just have it playing and have the environment bring the magic of this Welsh town into your home, supported by this great music.
Yeah. It is a really nice environment to be in, and when I'm going to get my Christmas tree this year, I will take even more time to do it and look at the tree and maybe get into the tree's mind and understand, because there are several scenes in this short where it shows people are very particular about their Christmas tree, and now I'm going to be even more considerate when it comes to that.
Well, and it's so true what you say, and that was something that attracted us to this story and that we really tried to illuminate in our, as we adjusted the story to take it to screen, is this idea of resiliency. And you've got this little tree that he's got a plan for himself. He's always known who and what he wants to be. And when life throws him a curveball, how does he respond to that? And we hope that is a touching message to people, because there is that. I mean, what inspired the author, Jane, was one day driving past the Christmas tree lot after Christmas and seeing that there were still beautiful trees there and wondering, well, why weren't they chosen, and what left them, what left them there, and what happens to them next? And so we try to handle that in a tasteful and artful way. We really feel like we accomplished it.
I think you did. I think you absolutely did. I am rooting for you guys this holiday at awards season. Congrats on Piney the Lonesome Pine, Todd Edwards, and Timothy Hooton. Thank you for being on the LCJ Q&A today.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
You're welcome. A happy holiday season to everybody out there, and awards season as well. And we'll be back for more soon on the LCJ Q&A podcast. I'm Lights, Camera, Jackson. Thank you for listening.